What's good, Wager World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada, and here with my co-host, my guy, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreadester? How are you today?
It's a great time of year, Five Star. My two favorite months in sports betting are March and October, right? Because right now, NBA, we got the college playoffs finishing, NBA's finishing up, and baseball's starting. Then we fast forward to October, NBA is beginning, college basketball is beginning, baseball's ending. This is a great time, so many different opportunities, and if you don't like the board on one sport, you can switch to another. And of course, I failed to mention it, but we talked about it this morning. Tennis goes year-round, so we always have tennis to take advantage of. But how are you doing today?
Man, I'm great, man. Another beautiful day. Watched the Rockets last night. A little disappointing, but not too disappointed because we know we're dealing with a really young team. A lot of fuss made at the Bay Area about Tari Eason, and I think it's just in fun that he's doing all that stuff. He wore the little t-shirt with Warriors come out to play. Steph's shaking the bottles. For the Rockets, I see this as entertaining. You know, it's a good thing. Everything's looking up, no matter if they make the playoffs or not. They're one of the youngest teams in the NBA, if not the youngest. And then they're contending for a playoff spot when no one expected that from this team. Goons out. They got a lot of good things going, but I do love the way that Ime Udoka called out the team and said they weren't prepared and made them accountable. As far as with the mess between the Warriors, you know, a lot of noise and stuff about what happened last night. We know that the Warriors play their best against Houston. And the reason they play so well against Houston, they've always respected them as the franchise that's in the West that's really trying to knock them off their podium. Them and the Lakers are the two teams that they get up most for. We know that about the Warriors over the years. So I knew I was going to see the best from the Warriors. What I didn't like is how serious Clay was talking at the podium about it and talking noise about Tari Eason. I like more the approach to Draymond, because Draymond was like, you know, made sense what he said. He said, like, hey, you know, this is just a kid, he's fun. Clay took it all serious, like they won Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, and he's, you know, acting like the grumpy old man. But Clay, you just was on the bench for 2 years and doing this 1, 2, 3, 4, looking corny as hell down the way to another bench. I just think that this shows to me how much the Warriors have failed as a franchise, because they should not be so happy and so excited to get in the 10th seed. They should be answering reporters like, we're not even worried about the Rockets. We're more worried about the fact that we're such a low number in the playoffs and that we underachieved this year, and we're going to fight, do everything that we can, you know, in the playoffs to make the best of this opportunity, instead of, you know, like clowning with the Rockets for the play-in tournament.
And Clay's the number one culprit of there. When I look at the Warriors' demise, it's the fact that they have so much salary wrapped up and two players who are past their prime, and I'm talking about Clay Thompson and Chris Paul. I think still Chris Paul has something to add to this league, but he's definitely overpaid for his contributions. On the Rockets side, I would not be too down if I was a Rockets fan. This is just a great matchup for the Warriors with this current iteration of the Rockets team. The Warriors are going to play best against other small teams that are going to play their style of basketball. And with Sengun being out, and we love the smaller Rockets lineup, but the difference there was the experience, and of course having that number one guy in Steph Curry, who's still one of the greatest players of all time, even though he seems to be slowing down a bit. So overall, right, it's not over yet, but we can say it was a great season for the Rockets. And under Coach Udoka, I think they have one of the best futures in the Western Conference. They still have a ton of picks coming in. They're going to be able to continue to upgrade, whether it's through the draft or packaging some of those picks and bringing in a veteran. Future's bright in Houston, and the sun is going to be setting here on the Warriors. And I think that's why Bob Myers left. I think he's on the Commanders now. I've never seen a guy switch sports like that. But right, I think he knew that, hey, I can't compete for a championship with Clay and Dre, but Steph doesn't want to let these guys go. So I don't want to be the bad guy and trade Steph's guys, right, and have Steph hate me. I'll just bow out and let them kind of finish up their run And hey, as a Kings fan, if you told me, hey, you get, you know, 3-4 championships, but you got a couple bad years with the veterans who brought you those championships, I would take it. So I'm all fine for that. You know, maybe in 10 years, it'll be better if Clay retires in a Warriors uniform. Maybe we don't need to see him out there in a Magic uniform or in a Hornets uniform trying to hold on here. And I'm not necessarily excited.
He needs to be a Rocket the way he shoots in Houston. I haven't seen him play like that forever. For some reason, he loves shooting in the Toyota Center, man. Over the years, he's always performed well. And a little bit just on what you said about Bob Myers leaving. You know, our guy that we follow, Coach Richard Goodman, always talks about this. He was in tune really well with that Warriors organization. He had some great insiders over there, and he was talking about when it was all going on, and Bob Myers left because he felt like Kerr kind of like chose the veterans over him. You know, he traded away all his draft picks, all the guys that he picked for him to start the new evolution, because we remember the Warriors kind of sold their souls. They were in the COVID tournament. They were like the number one pick. They worst team in the league, and then the following year, they make their moves and they make a, you know, a great run at the end of the year to go, and I think it's a 60 to end up winning the championship. First team to do that since, I think, the Houston Rockets. But he really was ready to move on and go into the next version of the Warriors. You know, what I'm hearing from them is that he wanted to draft Lonzo Ball as well. He liked Anthony Edwards, and all of these things were vetoed, and that no one was, you know, in that organization was trying to move forward because Draymond and Steph have such a grip on the organization. You know, as a guy from that area of the world, that the Warriors have long time had a great fan base, but they had really fallen off. Now the young kids think the Warriors are a dynasty, really good franchise, which they are over time, but you know, you and I know they had a really long downtime, even when Run TMC was so-called one of the best, you know, trios in the NBA. They weren't a real factor in the, you know, championship, and that's what Steph and Draymond brought to that team. Clay brought to that team was championship aspirations, and kind of took it back to the 70s when they were a proud franchise. Barry is the lead guy over there. So they'll have statues built in front of the stadium for probably both of them, probably all three of them. Probably Clay, Steph, and Draymond will have, you know, statues in front of the new San Francisco stadium. It's not a lot of history there over at the Chase Center. But at the end of the day, how long too long on holding on to a team? I just feel like, you know, the Warriors have always been a cocky, unlikable team to people outside of their fan base. But it's just, I feel like they want to look, like, put a little extra, like, you shouldn't go down to the level of these kids. These Rockets are little kids, man. You should ignore them. It's like a gnat, you know? It's like a, this is supposed to be like a gnat to an elephant, you know what I mean? Like, just, you know, but it seemed like they really, you know, got under their skin, and or maybe they're looking for something to celebrate, but I feel like it was disrespectful to their past history, or maybe it shows how far that they've fallen.
Things are getting interesting, man, and I know that it's smokescreen season and it's rumor season. What are you believing? What are you not believing? I think that it's safe to say that Caleb's going number one. That's a for sure thing, but from there on out, it could go anywhere. I've even heard rumors of J.J. McCarthy going all the way up to number two. So, first two questions, let's start with that number two pick. Number one, who do you think they should pick? And number two, who do you think that they will pick, right? So, for example, you might think Drake May is the best pick, but they're going to pick Jaden Daniels. Who do you think they should pick, and who do you think they will pick?
Well, you know, I've been a Jaden Daniels guy a long time, Spread. We've been talking about how long have I been telling you about Jaden Daniels. When he was at Arizona State, I felt like he was the best quarterback that year coming out the draft. And I forgot which class that was that he was in. If I'm not mistaken, maybe Sam Howell.
It would have been pretty good because I think that's that 2020 class that other than Trevor Lawrence, kind of completely bombed out.
Somehow Jaden Daniels, I like that he's been really successful in two different conferences where you're going to play the best. And he didn't miss a beat going to LSU. In their biggest games, he played his best. It's some great throws that he's made on film, quick release. And we know what type of athlete he is. You know, he's a Lamar type of athlete when it comes to straight line speed. Doesn't have as much wiggle as Lamar, but a lot of athleticism. People worry about him being able to hold up because of his size and frame, but I think that his frame is one that's, even though he's You know, slim and tall. I think he's more sinewy. He's not like a RG3 track body. His body's still a football body. I think like Lamar, he'll fill in a little bit more to get on different weight programs. And the most impressive thing, he didn't have any injuries all through his career. He's never had a major injury, whereas in RG3 had major injuries before. You know, this stuff that happened to him in the NFL. Caleb Williams, I have an insider on Caleb. I got a good friend here, actually, in Las Vegas, who's from the D.C. area, that's really close friends with his dad. So I've kind of known he was going to the Bears a while. It was more like the dad told, and his dad is super solid, and that's who's running his stuff. Caleb's a diva. You know, he's a little bit much, but his dad is a super solid guy, you know, and his dad isn't like, you know, if Chicago drafts us, that's what we're going to play. You know, story franchise. It's the number one pick. We want to be the number one pick. And he also says that it would be disrespectful to the city of Chicago, how much they love their football, for his son, you know, not to go play there. And he also looks at it like a situation like C.J. Stroud had in Houston with a defensive-minded coach, pretty good roster, and they think that they can put him in a position to be successful early. So he's going to the Bears. That's a lot. You know, a lot of people come in and watch them going to trade.
Most teams with the number one pick, they come into a completely decimated roster. For example, Bryce Young last year was essentially in a no-win situation. I think this is one of the best number one pick teams overall that a prospect could go to. The defense is solid. They just added Keenan Allen. We know they have DJ Moore. So I think that he's right to go there. And that'll be an interesting way to shake up an NFC North that's always been quite competitive. So do you think the Commanders will take Jaden Daniels, though, or do you think they're going to go in a different direction?
I think that they want Jaden Daniels. Now it boils down to if Dan Quinn and the GM agree on it. But I know that another inside, you know, thing that I've been telling you guys, if you remember, I tweeted this maybe about a month ago, and now AB's tweeting it too. So if AB says it, you better take it serious, because AB knows a lot of, you know, guys in that Raiders organization, and I do as well. I know some, you know, players over there, and I'm hearing that the Raiders want Jaden Daniels. I already saw the connection coming. You know, Antonio Pierce was his defensive coordinator on the team in Arizona State. Really think that they're going to push and do everything they can, and I think that with him being a West Coast kid from Bakersfield, California, he wants to play. Don't get me wrong. You're going to play wherever they pay you. But his preferred destination would be to be in Vegas with the Raiders. And the Raiders are in a really good position to set them up for success. They have a really good young quarterback coming back who's kind of like, reminds you of kind of like you did with Kirk Cousins with him and RG3, where, you know, he was a later pick in Aiden O'Connell, but he can play, you know. So I think the Raiders will let him play until he fails this year. If he looks good, they'll trade him, and Jaden Daniels will be the quarterback in 2025. But the Raiders are pushing hard for Jaden Daniels, and why wouldn't they? I think that he would light up the scoreboard out here, especially if they could keep Davante Adams around.
Oh, Devontae, I think Devontae wants to stay at this point of his career. This is his favorite team growing up, and he's always pushed back. Anytime someone tries to put out a rumor that he wants to leave, he's always denied it flat out. Whereas, you know, other times when guys want to be traded, they'll just say, let them talk. Or is that what you're hearing, right? Very definitive no's from Devontae. Feels like he wants to end his career in Las Vegas. And why not? What a great place to live, right? After spending all those years in Green Bay, I think I'd much rather be spending some time in Las Vegas. The New England Patriots are at number 3. Who do you think's going there? Are they going to draft a quarterback?
They have to. I mean, they have to draft a quarterback. They have no choice but to draft a quarterback. My guy Lance Erline had him taking Drake May, and I could very much see that. That's the type of organization, you know. He fits perfectly into, you know, the Brady mold. Yeah, he fits that system. He's going to be a much better pro than he was a college player. Last year, I think it was a lot of just trying to stay healthy, dad. And big brother telling him, like, hey, you got a lot of money on the line. So I think that we'll see the best Drake May when he becomes a professional. He has all the tools, man. Like, he has the height, he has the arm, he has speed, he can escape ability. I kind of comp him to Lawrence. I think that he could be a Trevor Lawrence.
All right. And then at number 4, we have the Arizona Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
They got a great position to be in. because they have their quarterback in Kyler. Most likely, the first three picks are going to be quarterback. They just get the best available player on the board. Do you think they go with Marvin Harrison, or is there going to be someone else suiting up for the Arizona Cardinals?
My guy Lance Erline says Malik Nabers is going to be the pick. And Malik jumps off the board with everything that he can do. He hasn't done it as long and doesn't have as a popular name as Marvin Harrison Jr., but physically, he's a little bit more talented, man. He's more explosive, a lot faster. He works at all three levels. He's a touchdown waiting to happen. Don't get me wrong, Marvin Harrison Jr. is great, too. He could very much come to Arizona and feel the role that Larry Fitzgerald was over there. Right? He's the exact same guy. You know, he doesn't have a lot of speed, technician, just enough speed. Great at high point the ball, great at getting open, great at doing the little things. Quiet teammate is just going to come to work every day, you know. And it's always good when you have these guys who are second generation professional athletes because they already know how to go to work. We know what type of guy his dad was. His dad was a workman. You know, he came to work, did his job, kept his head down. Was low key one of the biggest gangsters in Philly, but on the football field, he was just a worker.
The rumors I heard was it's like Omar. If he walks down the street, everybody runs inside.
Yes. No.
He got pulled like that from what I heard.
Yeah. I know some people in Philly, man. He's one of those guys that he's the puppet master. His hand is hidden, but he's got a lot of power, man, around that car wash, man. So,
all right. I got one more draft question for you, and then we're going to move into today. But at number five, I'm really curious to see how Jim Harbaugh approaches this. With the trade of Keenan Allen, everybody thinks that he's going to draft a wide receiver, and why not? Because if the Cardinals do take Nabers, you get Marvin Harrison Jr. at number five. I mean, yeah. I kind of agree Nabers is probably the better pick, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's the best player in the draft, and I wouldn't be surprised if both players had excellent careers, and, you know, either one is fine for you. But knowing Harbaugh, you know, as being so long in the local, right, with him really making his name at Stanford, and then of course with the San Francisco 49ers, he loves his linemen, and he could get a guy like Joe Alt at number five and try and take, you know, shore up this wide receiver position in the second round, because this is a deep wide receiver draft. There's a good chance that even the guys fifth, sixth, seventh guys off the board are going to be productive 8-10 years players in the league. Do you think that the Chargers will go line? Everyone thinks they're going receiver. I'm saying, knowing Jim Harbaugh and the way that he wants to build his team with toughness and to win at the line of scrimmage, I wouldn't be surprised if they went offensive lineman. What do you expect the Chargers to do?
I think that they would go offensive lineman any other year. But this year, with them losing their top two receivers, you know, they lost their top two guys.
Yeah.
So, if you got your top two guys, you got to rebuild that whole, you know, wide receiver room. And you have to give somebody for Justin Herbert to throw to. Now, he could go out and then, you know, later try to go and grab his guy from Michigan that who might be available in the second round, who's a baller as well. Yeah, Harbaugh could go offensive tackle early and stick to his roots and of building around the line, and then look for Roman Wilson later on in the draft, who was a real good player at Michigan, man, and he's underrated. He can really play. So, I don't know. I just feel like with the room being empty the way it is, Keenan Allen's a big hit. We know that, you know, Mike Williams didn't pan out to who he was supposed to be, but he still made a lot of big plays. Those two were you know, the first options for Justin Herbert. You got to put somebody in there. Like I said, I'm still looking at Lance's draft. He has them going after Marvin Harrison Jr., so maybe the Michigan man draft one of those kids from Ohio State, and see how it's going.
He'd have a great idea of how hard it is to stop him, right? If anyone knows how hard it is to stop Marvin Harrison, it's going to be Harbaugh, who had to scheme against him.
Rome Odunze is one to watch as well. Rome Odunze is really underrated. I think that he's one of those guys who's going to be an instant impact player.
Yeah, one thing I noticed watching Odunze, because I watched probably the Pac-12 more than any other conference, RIP, but his ball skills and his tracking skills were just elite. His ability to adjust while the ball was in the air was some of the best I've seen from a college prospect. So when you have ball skills like that, you don't need the athleticism, because 50-50 balls become 80-20, and your ability to track sometimes on a bad thrown ball, the corner's playing a route and you adjust and the corner's not expecting it. So I agree. I think Odunze, I mean, this is a great wide receiver draft, so it's going to be really exciting. Let's move into the past because we had plenty of winners and we want to talk about it. I'll tell you what, I did not think we were going to catch this one five-star in the Seton Hall game in the NIT. What an ending for that game, and boy, how disappointing must it have been for people who are fans of or backing Indiana State, as it felt like they had that game in hand. It felt like they really shut the door on them, and then what a wild comeback. What did you think when you saw the Seton Hall game?
I'll tell you one thing, Spread. That was everything that a championship game is supposed to be, right? I mean, everything that you would want in a championship game, we got in that one. Great runs, great effort by both teams. All of the best players playing the best. You know, you got the factor that Indiana State's basically at home because they had 90% of the crowd cheering for them. It was so funny. They kept showing Dre Davis's family, like his son's mom and him, and his little crew. That's why I tweeted Dre Davis and his family against Indiana. They just surrounded by all these Indiana people just going crazy. They're just this one little group from New Jersey trying to get it home for Seton Hall, man. But Seton Hall just showed what I knew. They had a gut to their coach, man. Shaheen Holloway was a tough, gritty player. Seton Hall played with a lot of effort, you know, never went out easy, always went out on his sword, and he's passed that fight to this team, man. When they went down, it was a 7-0 run that Indiana State went on, and Indiana State went up at the time, I believe, was it 77-70. Do you know that Indiana State didn't score another point the last 2 minutes of that game? Seton Hall closes on a 9-0 run, shows all types of goods. Just wonderful players. And how about, I know that we give a lot of props to Kadari Richmond, man. We know Kadari Richmond is a future NBA player, really versatile guy, 6'6 point guard. But man, I can't say enough about the kid, Dawes. Alamir Dawes, man, he had 24 points, huge three-pointer. He actually was an and one, and he scored the last three games 20 points or more, you know, to help really help this team and be the force they needed. He shot about 60% from the three-point line in this tournament, man. Just really, really great job, man, of being the offense that they needed to get over the hump. And we're just happy we got there. We're happy we got there with you guys. If you listen to the show, we got the plus three and we got the plus 140. So just a great game, and exciting, and one of those ones where the 1% goes our way against the 99.
Right, I was just going to say that. For all the bad beats, it was nice to get one that goes our way where, you know, I mean, I would actually feel bad for Indiana State backers, but that's the way it goes, and it was nice to be on the right side of it. Yeah. Another play that we had on that Wednesday show was was kind of correlated. I had the over, and you had the Wizards plus 13, and the reason I said it was correlated was because I needed the Wizards to keep this thing close for the game to go over. I had eyes on this game. What I saw was this is where the Lakers and LeBron are going to struggle against the spread, because I think against a normal team on a normal night in a dead arena, the Wizards might have packed it in. There was times they were down by 16, 17, and I was worried, is this team going to give up? But because I think of the extra atmosphere in the arena, kind of almost a neutral feel, there were so many Lakers fans in the crowd, but I think it kind of fired up the Wizards, right? Because they didn't want to have a bad showing on their home court. Kuzma didn't want to get blown out by his teammates. They ended up only losing by 5. Respectable performance. We got there as it went over by 10 points, and you know, you covered by 8 points. I probably watched that a little more than you, but did you watch that game, and what were your thoughts? It was just another reason why I think that LeBron and some of these best teams are always struggling against the spread, against big numbers, because these players want to play against LeBron. If it was against the Orlando Magic or the Chicago Bulls, they might have just packed it in. But, you know, they fought all the way to the end, and it paid off for us. It
went exactly how we expected. The Lakers coming out early with a push, and they tried to knock out the Wizards in the first quarter. They end up still in the lead. The Wizards played good at the beginning, but the Lakers tried to knock them out in the first quarter so they could just coast the rest of the way. They went up 10 points by the end of that quarter, but a great fight in the second half by the Wizards to get the game, you know, under double digits. And then another spurt by the Lakers in the third quarter with the knockout punch that had us really sweating. but then a really strong finish. They were down 15 points going into the fourth quarter, and man, the Wizards pushed hard because, as we said, you're dealing with an older team on a back-to-back. I always give me the young legs. So the Wizards competed, man, and as we talked about, they're going to always be more excitement in that gym when the purple and gold or the Laker blue and gold pulls up into the arena, man. So great job. And it just went like we expected. You take the younger team with a double-digit spread anytime on back-to-backs on the road against a veteran team like the Lakers, and also with the Lakers' last game for their road trip.
All right. Final game on Wednesday night that we played was the Phoenix Suns. And, boy, that Cleveland Cavaliers team is really struggling right now, and we were able to take advantage of it. At the same time, I don't want to deny the Suns their credit. This is the best they've played all year. And kind of like the Lakers and LeBron like to do, right? It feels like this team is finding itself at its right time. I do have concerns about their ability to get stops in the postseason, but boy, they have two dynamic scorers, and even playing, you know, average defense, they might be able to outscore some teams, create some mess in the playoffs. I don't know if they can do it four series in a row, but with those two shot makers in Durant and Booker, I feel like the Suns could take out anyone in a four-game series if they get hot, including the Denver Nuggets. What did you see there when the Suns got an easy cover against the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Dominance. From the very jump, Suns came out on fire, man. They were up 25 at halftime, you know, so wasn't really close at all. And as the game went a little bit, I mean, Cavs made a decent little push, but not enough to get it under the 20. They still lost by 21 points. The Suns are a team to watch. It's a lot of people, including Zeno, that took them, you know, to win the championship before the season. Late push, but at this point, it's just getting in the dance. It's like these teams don't care about home field advantage anymore, home court advantage in this instance. The Nuggets do have one of the better home court advantages, but how scared is KD going to be going back to OKC if they end up playing them in the first round? Like, he'll love that. To cut out their heart to their little young team and show them that he's the one that built the stadium. So, things looking up for the Suns. 40 points by Booker. He has, what, 92 points or something like that in the last two games or something crazy like that. Like, this guy's finding his stride right at the right time. We know that Booker can take games over when he's hot. The thing I like about KD, he lets the game come to him. He's always been one of those guys that can play with anyone. Things looking up for the Suns. We'll see how they do in the playoffs, see if they get Grayson Allen back and those guys and get healthy and make a push.
Yeah, they're definitely alive. Final thought there. I know Sino's on the Suns. You know which one I was happy I got that I got during the injury?
What's that?
35-1 on Philly to win the championship.
Oh, nice. And I know, nice. They looked, you know, good last night.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know they're not, you know, that likely to do it, but they're much better than 35-1. I'll tell you that much. Let's jump in on the present because we have some fun tonight. Let's start with the women as they've kind of taken over the basketball world right now with the most exciting product, it feels like, put on the floor here. You know, no disrespect to the men's tournament, but this women's tournament has really captured the hearts and minds of America's viewing public. What do you see tonight when UConn takes on Iowa?
Hey, man, this is right here is going to be a fabulous, fabulous game. I really look forward to it. You got Paige Buckers. She's facing off against Caitlin Clark. These are the last three winners of the Player of the Year award because Caitlin Clark won 2 years straight and Paige won the year before a really bad leg injury that she had. X factor in this game is going to be Aaliyah Edwards, man. She's averaging 18 points and 10 rebounds this season. How does Iowa slow her down? You know, Iowa runs four guard set. Their biggest player is 6'2", and she stayed in foul trouble against LSU. They couldn't do anything against LSU. LSU out rebounded them 54-36. Had 23 offensive rebounds. As you saw, Angel Reese had 20 boards, and Angel and this girl Aaliyah Edwards are about the same size, 6'3", strong. I think that it's going to be difficult for Iowa to control the boards, and most of all, it's going to be difficult for Iowa to shoot as well as they shot last game. They shot lights out from the three-point line. Geno Auriemma is one of the biggest a-holes in the world. We know that, but he's playing so humble this week and being such a nice guy. saying all these great things about Caitlin Clark, but we know behind the scenes, he's telling Paige Buckers that, hey, this is your time to show them that you're the best player in the world in college basketball. And I think we get the best version of these Huskies tonight. They have some injuries. If they had their full squad, kind of like what Molly Karam was saying, people took it wrong, but Molly was telling people the truth. Like, UConn had a star-studded team, and they're missing like two or three girls who were all Americans in high school. So even with this version of the Huskies, though, I think their experience, and most of all, the public, man, the public is too heavy on Iowa. Caitlin Clark is the love of their life right now. And MGM is reporting that 85% of the ticket count is on Iowa, and 88% of the money is on Iowa to cover the spread. 64% handle, you know, on the money line. It's a lot of one-sided acts. I'm going to be like I've always been, a contrarian, and roll with Vegas on this one. I'm going with UConn, +3. And also on the outright, +3, that should be a lot higher than +125, don't you think, Spread?
Yeah, for sure.
At a +3, so we're going to run with the +125 and the +3. And we're going to go with Aaliyah Evers to go over 9.5 rebounds. She's been a double-double machine. 11 of her last 17 games, she's had that. And I think that Iowa has a hard time keeping her off the board. You know, with this being the game of her life to try to get to the championship, she's going to give it her all as a senior. So give me Aaliyah Evers over 9.5 rebounds as well.
All right. South Carolina laying double digits against NC State. How do you think that game's going to turn out?
Man, South Carolina's good. Don Staley has built a real monster over there. Undefeated, flawless record this year, 36-0. They've been dominating in this tournament, man. They've won every game by a margin of at least 30 points, except for a four-point game they had against Indiana in the Sweet 16, but those other three have not been close. They're making their fourth consecutive Final Four appearance, third in scoring this year. They average about 86 points a game, but they only allow 56 points. Just a really dynamo of a team. They're just loaded. But then you have a balanced Wolfpack team. This NC State team is much like their the men's side, just like UConn. I think that the factor with UConn ladies tonight is that the guys are there, so they're kind of like, hey, our boys are playing. Let's show up for them, too. So it kind of gives a lot of momentum to the basketball program. The NC State has the same type of mentality, though, that their men have right now. It's like, you know, we got nothing to lose. We're the underdogs. Every time our guys win, we're going to win. So the Wolfpack have a lot of good things going for them right now, Spread. They also are very balanced. They got five players that average double digits on their team. Their five starters are all scoring double digits. You got Sanaya Rivers, who transfers. She won a championship in limited action in 2022 with South Carolina. But maybe she can give NC State's coach, you know, some inside information on some of the things that Don State likes to do. Gamecocks have not been good against the spread this year. They're 15-17 against the spread. I think that the Wolfpack can keep this game close than people think. I don't like to give up double digits in a championship situation. You're going to get the best out of these girls. I know this is a behemoth that they're facing, but I'll take NC State +11.5 points.
All right, taking NC State there. Let's move over to the men. NC State once again. And NC State catching points once again. This line has continued to go up, and why not? Purdue has been absolutely dominating so far. Maybe I'll get your thoughts on Zach Edey and the NBA at the end of this breakdown. But talk to me about what you expect to see tomorrow night when the Boilermakers take on the Wolfpack.
I like NC State in this game. Why would I get up off of them, man? They're 8-1 against the spread in their last nine. 9-0 straight up. I mean, 8-0 as underdogs in all of these situations. The only game they didn't cover, they only missed it by half a point when they were favored by Oakland. They ended up missing a free throw or something. They won by 6. The spread was 6.5, but they could have easily got that. In fact, this entire group of teams that's in the Final Four have been unblemished against the spread. The other three teams are all 4-0 against the spread in return as well. So just a great field of teams that are playing really well. And a year that we didn't really know much about which team was going to push. We knew UConn was good and they were going to be shooting to try to, you know, win it again. But the rest of these teams, we didn't know who was going to be there. And we got a really good group of teams that are all playing good at the right time. NC State, the difference for them is DJ Burns. We know that. DJ Burns is 275. Zach Edey is 300 pounds. DJ Burns is one of the few guys in America that can get low and has the strength to push Edie off the box. Now, are the refs going to allow him to play in that style? Are they going to give him a lot of tic-tac fouls for getting physical with Edie back when he gets physical with him? If they don't, if they let him play like they've been doing most of the tournament, they've been letting teams play, then I think that he's going to cause some difficulties for Edie. This morning on ESPN 97.5, they said there's a prop out. Of course, we don't get stuff like that in Vegas, but I'm sure you might get an action at a spread. It was a prop, does Zach Edey block a DJ Burns shot? And I think that that would be a really good wager to make, because I think he gets it once or twice, because the way Burns is going to have to play, he's going to have to get into his gut. He's going to have to get up under him, and I think that he can give him some problems, but Edie's a great defensive player with a lot of length and a lot of smart, so I do think he can block him once or twice. So if you can find that prop, play it. But I think that DJ Burns can also step outside and face up on Zach Edey and make a move his feet. We know that he can knock down that 15-foot jumper really well. He's quick off the face-up, too. He also passes really well from the interior. I just think that NC State, I know that the public's going to be all in my way on this one. I think it's like 70% of the tickets, but I cannot go against NC State the way that they won me money ever since the ACC tournament. You know, I'm not going to go against them, man. I bet Purdue only once in the tournament, and they covered for me against Tennessee. I do respect them. As I've told you on prior shows, they have the most impressive record of anyone this season because they've beaten the best teams. Even with that said, I got to roll with NC State with this 9.5. I'm hoping to push this up to 10. We might buy half a point. Matter of fact, if you can find a 9.5, just buy half a point to 10 and get it to a -120 or something like that. It's very important to get to that key number, that key double digit. And the reason why is, as we said last week on the show, four different teams have been to the Final Four, and the entirety is double-digit dogs in all four covers, 2-1 straight up. So that's too many points in a championship setting for me to give up. So let's go with NC State. We're going to take the plus 10. Guys, remember, this is a great defensive team. They've done it all the last 30 days of the year, man. They've been on fire since March 13th, man. They've covered everything. They've locked people down. And I think that the main matchup for this game is going to be Casey Morsell on Braden Smith. I mean, Mike O'Connell also on Braden Smith. They're two strong, older kids that play a lot of really good defense. Braden Smith is a sophomore for Purdue, but he's the key to the offense because what he does is orchestrate and make sure that they get efficient offensive possessions. I think that they can get him off of his spots. I think they can harass him a little bit, and I think that's going to be a factor in the game because NC State has really active hands and they play really good wing defense. I think that the entry passes to Edie won't be as easy this week. So give me NC State, and they are a live dog at plus 342 to win outright.
That would be quite the upset, as I'll bet you talked about everyone being on Iowa. I'll bet you everyone's on Purdue as far as the public splits. I haven't looked at it. That's just a guess from me. Talk to me real quick. Is Zach Edie going to be a successful pro? Will he be a starter? Or is this Luke Garza all over again? Does Edie have the skills, or is he going to be too slow?
And I'm so glad you said Luke Garza. I got a small debate with some guys on Twitter. You know I am. I'm in for 5 minutes, and I'll tweet for 5 minutes hard, and then I'm gone for 5 hours. So they caught me one of the days I was tweeting, and I said something about that Edie was going to get killed on the switch. And first I talked about Clinton. This was about Clinton. Some UConn guys got at me. They were mad because I said Clinigan won't be a pro. He'll be on the bench. He'll be pretty much a Boban. And they were like, no, he's going to be the number one pick. No way. Because Clinigan, unlike Edie, isn't as athletic. He doesn't shoot free throws at high percentage. He has no touch, no back to the goal game. He's just strictly just a defensive guy. And they're going to pull his slow-footed butt out in the lane, and these quick guards are going to kill him. Edie, on the other hand, is a lot more athletic. Ex-Canadian, play some soccer, play some hockey, right? Off touch, really high percentage shooter from. He reminds me of Yao Ming. Do you think Yao Ming could play in today's NBA? I think so. So yeah. I think that Edie has a place in the NBA with the right team. I think he has more success than Luka Garza, but I compared Clinigan to Luka Garza because I was trying to tell the UConn fans that, hey guys, Luka Garza is an amazing offensive weapon. He can shoot the three, he can dribble, he can post. He has every imaginable offensive weapon that you can imagine for a kid that's 7'2", right? He still couldn't stick in the league because his feet, and because he couldn't play defense in the league, right? He's at the end of some bench, I think at Washington still or somewhere else, you know, on the bench, or he's in the G League.
He's on Minnesota right now.
Okay,
so he actually slimmed up to try to be a little more viable.
Yeah, he's going to have
a good job. I mean, he's working hard. He's a great offensive weapon, man.
He's a great offensive weapon. But if my point was, if he couldn't make it, Clinigan was going to have hell. Ede is a different type of player. Ede is a special back to the goal center. Like, he's going to eat you alive if you don't have the right people to cover him. He can pass out of the – not an excellent passer, but not a bad one at all. He's above average passer. Once again, he can shoot free throws. He's a really soft shooter, just like Yao Ming was. Soft touch around the rim where anything he puts up on the glass almost goes in. So, I like Zach Eady, man. I think Zach Eady is different. He's one of the few guys that I think is going to be like Rudy, where he can find his way in the league with that height. And he's going to be a valuable offensive weapon, too, because he can handle the switch a little bit better than teams. And if he gets the right type of coach, then I think that he's going to be okay. I think that he will be still a top 15 pick.
Yeah, and especially with the draft of this year. But the key is going to be a coach who understands how to use drop coverage and then just avoiding the five-man switches. So we'll see how he does against five out. But even – I think you're right. I think he does have a place here. And with a lot of teams going small, he may be able to punish them on the other side for teams that try to play five out. Another big spread here on Saturday. I was hoping to be a little closer here going into the tournament, but the Alabama Crimson Tide catching 11.5 against the UConn Huskies. Is it going to be another dominant performance from the Huskies, or can Alabama keep it close?
The Huskies have been dominant. They've won 10 straight NCAA tournament games by more than 13-point spread, all the while going 10-0 against the spread. One of the most underrated teams that we've had win the championship. Like, most time when you're the defending champion, everyone's looking at you, everyone's talking about you, but they had some turnover in the lineup. I think that's what people probably were thinking about. You know, didn't know if they were going to respond the same as they were last year. But if this game is played any other time of the year, spread, my number said that Alabama would be like +8, you know. Like, so I think that they're getting a really good number at 12. Alabama's a really good offensive team, spread. I mean, they led the country in scoring. So, anytime you got a high-octane team like this, and they only take threes and dunks, they play NBA style. It's real analytics over there. Nate Oakes implement is that are really versatile, that are long, athletic, and can shoot. I think that they give UConn a better game than people are thinking. UConn has been lights out in the first half on all of these games, but I think that Alabama has the scoring ability and the scoring prowess and kids who aren't going to be scared of the moment. So give me Alabama plus the 12. I hope it goes up more. Give me Alabama plus 12, man.
I think it's going to. Everybody that is just casually betting the NCAAs, right, that doesn't watch college basketball and just starts betting during the tournament, they've cashed on Purdue and they've cashed on UConn. So why would they not just continue to do that? And their account's got to be pretty fat, too, assuming they haven't tried to bet the landmine that's been the NBA these last couple weeks, right? And give it all back. But if they're just simply betting college for fun, right? I mean, it's just like Pavlov's dog. You ring the bell, you get money. You hit Purdue, you get money. I think that there's going to be, if you like these dogs, I think you wait until Saturday afternoon to place those bets.
Double-digit dogs have covered in every game of the Final Four in its history. They're
4-0. Oh, I didn't know that. That's good knowledge.
Yep. All right. Yep, they're 4-0. All right.
Let's get to the ball and parlay, the people's favorite segment. And it's not a Final Four pick here for you. I'm seeing what you got here. Talk to me about San Antonio versus the Memphis Showboats.
Hey, man, we're going to go with the over 38.5 on this one. San Antonio was one of the worst teams in the league last year and this year. And they have the great Wade Phillips over there. He hired A.J. Smith to come in and bring in up-tempo offense that these guys are running. Last week, they surprised everyone except me. I won plus 240 with them as they beat the D.C. Defenders at home in the Alamo Dome. I really like this team. I like the offense. What's going to benefit us most is that they always are in the hurry of offense, man. They're always trying to put points up. They're always trying to keep it moving. And they got some really good weapons on the outside with Devontae Kirkland and a couple more guys who can get it done, including a guy from Houston, man, who was a really, really good player there that ended up not sticking in the NFL that I thought would. I look for this USFL game to be exciting. You got Cookus over there with Memphis now. He's became their quarterback. He was a really good player for the Philadelphia Stars. I think the Philadelphia folded now, if I'm not mistaken, but he was their quarterback at first, and he could really put up some points. He takes chances. He loves to throw the ball, man. He loves to put it in the air. I think this game goes down to the wire, and I think that both teams can put up over 21 points. So it started off at 39.5. Now it's at 40.5. I caught 39.5. You can catch it, catch that one as well. We're going with the San Antonio Bronx and the Memphis Showboats to go over. Oh, you got 38.5 spread?
Oh, I thought that's what you said. I put it
over
on there. 30,
oh, no, it's over 39.5.
Let me switch that real quick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, actually, I'll just switch to mine. People know what it is. And I'm staying with San Antonio as well here. So people love the end of the NBA season, right? Because let's be honest, even if you're a public bettor, it's kind of easy. You fade the teams that are tanking. And I'm not going to go into my diatribe again about how gambling's not ruining the integrity of this league. The way the draft incentives are is really what's ruining this league. But here's what we're trying to be contrarian, right? Because people are going to load up fading the Raptors. And go right ahead. I'll be honest, I was close to putting fading the Raptors on here. Because you look, and most of the teams they play, none of their starting lineup would even make the opposing team's starting lineup, right? The best players they're putting out there right now are Grady Dick and Abaji, who are both going to be like solid contributors, but they're not the type of guys you want to lead their team. However, I decided to go the opposite route. Now, there's two teams that are really low in the standings that I am going to ride till the end of the season. It's the San Antonio Spurs and the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah. Two reasons. They're both well coached, and they both have at least one elite player on their roster. And maybe I'm being a little generous calling Jaren Jackson elite, but we've seen what he can do on both ends of the floor. And in order to cover these spreads, you need to get stopped. So I want excellent defensive players out there surrounded by a good coach. And I get that in Jaren Jackson Jr. and in today's pick, Victor Wembanyama. San Antonio's covered their last five games. They've covered in their last five games, and they've won outright as moneyline dogs in three of those five games. The San Antonio Spurs team isn't giving up, and from people who I follow in the league that are better at scouting and talking about player development, there's a good chance that Wembanyama is going to be a top five player by year three. And he's really close right now. We'd argue he's top 15, top 10. So I'm getting a top 10 player in the league, catching 11 points, going up against the Pelicans team that's struggling right now, that's really struggling to replace the offensive creation of Brandon Ingram on the offensive end, and also kind of a Swiss Army knife defender in Jose Alvarado. Both players missing right now. Wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans get the win. I didn't get there with the money line, but I'm going to be taking the points with the San Antonio Spurs every single game that Victor plays from here on out. Card subject to change, maybe not, but that's the way that I'm looking. Two dogs that I absolutely love this for the rest of the year, catching double digits: Memphis Grizzlies, San Antonio Spurs. We're taking the Spurs tonight. Give me the plus 11 against the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, I'll be putting in a ticket with you on that one. There's no way I'm taking the Pelicans right now. They aren't playing well. They're missing two key pieces. Alvarado, as we said, he brings so much energy, brings so much moxie to the second unit, and also plays really good defense. And then Brandon Ingram bails them out of so many positions because he takes difficult one-on-one shots that they're not going to be able to replace, man. So I'll be with you. The Spurs might money line them. So we're going to be on San Antonio Spurs plus 11, and we're going over 39.5 on the San Antonio Bronx versus the Memphis Showboats. Hey guys, we're rolling up on the Final Four this weekend, big weekend out in Phoenix. We're gonna enjoy it, and we'll be back here Monday with you guys. Anything for the people before we get out of here, Spread?
Cash these tickets and have a great weekend. Enjoy it while it lasts, because the dog days of summer are coming up.
Yeah, it's gonna be back to baseball every day. Yeah, I actually
baseball and tennis
right now. I got a bet going right now on the hated Yankees. Let's see if they can handle the Blue Jays. As always, This show is dedicated to the greatest Houston sports fan I know to ever walk the earth, and that's my father, John H. Lenz. I do this for you, Dad. Follow Spread at Spread Astaire. Follow me at 5-Star in Vegas. It's us versus the machine. This is the Wagering World.